Well, hello there, faithful listener, and welcome to our special Christmas Small Voice. Okay, so it's only just turned December, but whoever heard of a special Advent edition of anything? Answers on a postcard to a theologian of your choice. But meantime, welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. My name is Darren, and joining me, as ever, are Santa's little helpers, Anne.
Season's greetings to you.
And Margaret.
Ho, ho, ho.
And have we ever been busy in Santa's workshop, let me tell you. So in this unashamedly festive edition of the show, we have all our usual features, including the media review, a thousand words, small voice of the month, and the moral mixdown all cranked up to the full Rudolph. Plus we have live music, chat and banter from our friends Alex Shuttleworth, Robin Hill and Bill Wishart, who will be bringing us some festive carols. We may even go a wassailing. Wassailing? Wassailing?
Wassailing.
Whatever. Oh yes, keep it here, folks. Keep it here. So team, time for a Christmas heaven and hell. How has the month been, Anne?
You know, this is the first time I've seriously considered not telling you the truth, because I knew I'd be cranked up to full Rudolph for this programme, and actually it's been a really difficult month.
Mm-hmm.
Three of my friends have lost their mothers in the past fortnight, and within the family as well. My little cousin was widowed in his 30s and got a wee toddler to bring up now as a lone parent. So it's been hell. But in the programme, as in real life, I thought, no, hang on, this is Advent. And Advent is the season of love and joy and peace and above all, hope. So I'm going to assert heaven in the face of all of that. Not in denial, it's still been pretty horrible, but I'll reframe the events in the context of eternity, because there must be lots of families like mine this Christmas.
Okay. Lighting a candle in the darkness.
And I guess they need to know that it's possible.
Yeah. Okay. Margaret.
Funnily enough, something similar, but not in my own, I suppose not in my own family or anything. I had been kind of muttering a bit because I have to try and fit in visits to people, certain people in my church, and that, you know, there's kind of not a spare night, quite literally, and trying to find odd afternoons to Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, that kind of thing. And then I've been to visit various people, and it really brings me down to earth, because I have been talking to people who have suffered bereavement, who are suffering disability, I suppose. I don't like to use the word suffering all the time, but who have all sorts of things to put up with and get on with. And then I suppose the reason that I'm doing all the visiting is because we are leading up to communion. I have talked before about communion in the Church of Scotland, but it's a special thing. And of course, it's the Lord's Supper. It reminds us of what Jesus sacrificed on our behalf, and it is the hope. And as you're saying, Anne, this is Advent, that we almost need the bad times, because that's when we grow, that's when we develop our spiritual strength. And in terms of, yes, I've visited people, but they have given me hope as well. And so I wouldn't say heaven or hell. I think that's just life.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? We definitely said, yeah, we're going to be really Christmassy and cheery and upbeat, but we are Scottish. And it's not just that we're happily finding things to be unhappy about, but you know, there's a certain Scottish psyche, I think, that seems to cope fairly resiliently with the way life is sometimes. I don't know. For me, we recorded our podcast, the November podcast, right at the start of November. And on the Monday after that, on the 7th of November, my birthday indeed, Leonard Cohen died.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was sad. But at the same time, there was a lot of love expressed for Leonard Cohen. And it was a chance to share and revisit a lot of his amazing music. And he has that one lyric which a lot of people posted, and it almost hits exactly. And I did not plan this, but exactly what you were saying, Anne. And that's, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. That is what he said, and so right. So I would say, in a way, hell that Leonard Cohen died, but you know what? Absolutely heavenly to go back and listen to his music. Saying that, and there is no really good way to segue to this, if it's a bit of hell that you're after, something else happened in November. We might mention the US election at some point during the programme. We reserve that right. But there is a special bonus podcast that you can go and listen to where we do the full Donald. We do the full Donald, and we do it with righteous justice and anger. And, you know, you want to go and have a listen to that if you haven't found it already. So get yourself over to our website, smallvoice.org.uk, for that. OK, we are going to be Christmassy and cheerful and everything. And so for the media review, we didn't really... There wasn't really a film that we thought we could review, or TV programme, whatever. We thought, you know what, let's give people a taste of Christmas. I know it's a little bit early. For us, it's right at the start of December, but still. So we thought we will choose our favourite Christmas TV show or Christmas special, you know, or film or piece of music or whatever, and share it. And it might actually, I think we wanted it to be something that wasn't completely obvious for people. So, you know, yeah, It's a Wonderful Life, off you go, but we kind of know that. What has The Great Escape got to do with Christmas? Not really sure, but if that's your bag, off you go. So, Anne, what obscure film or whatever have you got for us?
Well, I'm not sure if it's obscure or not, but I will pass the DVD around as I describe it.
Never heard of it.
Well, exactly. The film I have chosen is called Noel.
Wow.
It originally
Big
was
names.
Released...
Big names, sorry. I'm
Big names, yes. Released in 2004, and I had never heard of it, starring Susan Sarandon and an uncredited Robin Williams. And I only discovered it when it was shown on television last year. And I am recommending it as a Christmas film worth having a look at. It's set in New York on Christmas Eve. It uses that old trope of interweaving the stories of five individuals who at the start of the day have never met, but in the course of the day affect each other's lives, and actually by the end of Christmas Eve, by Christmas Day itself, have transformed one another's lives by the power of forgiveness and real love. So let me just quickly tell you who the five people are. There's Rose, who is the central character, I would say, who's spending Christmas in a nursing home with her mother, who has Alzheimer's. Then there's a mysterious patient in the room across from her mother who never seems to have any visitors. There's Nina, a beautiful young woman played by Penelope Cruz, who has broken off her engagement because of her fiancé's jealousy and rage. There's Artie, an elderly man who can't forgive himself for an act of violence that he committed decades before. And finally, there's Jules, young man who is desperately trying to recreate the one happy Christmas that he's ever known. Now, I will concede right at the start that it's sentimental, okay? But not nearly as saccharine as many a Christmas film. But it's also, I think, really funny and a wee bit surreal and quite charming. And in the end, redemptive. And in my view, what more could you ask for in a Christmas film?
Is there a bit of kind of spirituality in there? Is like, it sounds like the sort of film where one of them you want to give spoilers away, like one of them turns out to be an angel or something like that. Or could you not possibly comment?
Not quite, but I will draw your attention to the apparently unconscious patient that I referred to earlier, played by Robin Williams. And that's where the spirituality of the film is centred.
OK, so that's called Noel.
Noel.
Or Noel. Mm-hmm. And it is available on
It
DVD.
Is available, yeah. Yes.
And Margaret, what's your choice?
Well, I'm not really one for watching films, as perhaps folks have become aware. And it was going to be The Sound of Music, because any excuse to mention my favourite place in the world, apart from
things.
Scotland, of course. Yeah. However, I heard an interview on the radio with one Alan Cummings, who is a Scottish-born actor, now I think mainly resident in the States, but does quite a lot in this country as well. And I thought, oh yes, there's an idea, because many, many years ago, there was I think it was a TV film which he starred in the title role of Bernard and the Genie. And my children loved it. And I think we must have had it on video and probably watched it again and again and again. I suddenly thought, oh, that's great. Alan Cummings played Bernard. The Genie was played by Lenny Henry. Mm. And for those who come from other places and to whom these names are not familiar, they're kind of good British actors. Richard Curtis had a hand in the whether directing or producing, I think probably directing. And it's a story. This hapless person, I think, hapless goes with Alan Cumming somehow. he loses his job. He loses his girlfriend. There's a bit of there is a sort of evil baddie in there. So we've got a bit of a pantomime thing going on there. Evil baddie played by another famous actor, Rowan Atkinson. Oh, yeah. And you can sort of hear him. This is, I think, pre Mr. Bean and all this sort of really funny stuff. But he was quite nasty in it. But anyway, Alan rubs the lamp that I think his girlfriend had given him, and there's this explosion. And after he comes back from hospital, he finds this genie has taken up residence in his flat. Genie, of course, comes from the first century, knows nothing of London culture. So there's a whole lot of stuff in the film where they go round all sorts of places. Bernard's introducing the genie to life in London and gets into all kinds of scrapes and things. But there are little flashbacks because the genie was put in the lamp because he had offended somebody and came from first century Palestine.
Uh-huh.
And he was a pal of Jesus when he was a boy. So it's very gentle. And I think, again, Alan Cummings, there's a sort of gentleness about him, and Lenny Henry's talking about, oh, yes, I knew he was going to do good somewhere. And then he discovers that, of course, Jesus was executed. Oh, no, you know, what a nice young man he was. It's such a long time since I've actually seen it. I think I'm going to have to go back and visit it again. But my son has a copy, which he was given by his sister. So I think we'll maybe all sit around the telly this year and watch it.
Okay. Had you heard of that one, Anne?
I'd never heard of it. Sounds great.
Bernard and the Genie. Okay, so that's two films. I'm not going to go for a film. I did wonder about going for aforementioned It's a Wonderful Life or whatever. But in the end, I've decided to go for a piece of music. And this is where I'm attempting to do my BBC Late Junction. Of course, if it was Late Junction, I would never talk over a piece of music, but this is what's called a classical jazz crossover album, and it's kind of Christmassy themed. The pianist that you're hearing is called Jan Lundgren, and the whole piece, or the collection, is called Magnum Mysterium, which I think means a large mystery or sacred mystery. And so it's just a very affecting piece of Christmas music. Have a listen. I think the reason I really like it is the kind of the mystery element of it. You know, I'm not a good enough scholar to know what they're singing about, but it somehow has a sort of Christmassy feel, or maybe more Adventy. I don't know. What do you think?
It's stunningly beautiful.
Well, there's about kind of I think 11 or 12 pieces, and some of it's quite choral, some of it's a bit jazzier. Nothing to get you upset over your Brussels sprouts. But it's, as I say, it's got Jan Lundgren, Magnum Mysterium, certainly available, you know, to download wherever. And if you can manage to buy a copy like I once did, hunted it down, then good luck for you. So there you go, two films and a piece of music. So over to you, listeners. Do you have a favourite Christmas film or TV show or piece of music to recommend? If so, why not hie thee thither and tarry ye not until ye find ye oldie website, smallvoice.org.uk, or tweet us at small_voice1. And remember, Santa's watching. We're delighted to have our musical guests with us now. We have Alex Shuttleworth, Robin Hill and Bill Wishart with us. Good day, gentlemen.
Good day to you.
Now, Alex and Robin, you've been with us before. Bill, you're the newcomer, so do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Bill.
How do you know these two reprobates? Or indeed, who are these two reprobates?
These two reprobates are friends, I hope, and colleagues as well. I actually work with Robin. I'm a probationer minister of the Church of Scotland, and Robin is my supervisor.
And so Alex, you're a man of the cloth as well, aren't you?
No, I'm a minister. I'm not a tailor. A lot of people make that mistake. Yes, I'm. Well, we're all ministers.
Isn't there a collective noun for ministers? Come on.
I like to think the word respect, or
is that
intelligence
of
ministers? Intelligence of ministers, why ever not?
Ministers? Yes. Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't think there is.
Okay,
a confusion of clergy.
You're kind of here as the sort of three tenors tonight. Well, not really, because only one of you is going to be singing. Robin, you're going to be in the dulcimer, and Bill, you're on the guitar. And we're delighted that you're doing some Christmas festive music for us. So, just before we go on to that, we're trying to be quite upbeat in this month, because you may recall that November was a rather tricky month, and 2016 has been an interesting and challenging month in many ways, not to get too political. So,
by which do you mean the world seems to have gone to hell in a handbasket? Is that what you're trying to say?
Kind of what we were thinking, yeah. So, do you have any advice for people as to how best, I mean, who better than ministers to chat to about how best to enjoy yourself this Christmas time? Come on, any tips?
Yes, emigrate. That would be one.
Where to, Alex? All right, okay.
Cheerio, folks.
Yes.
No, don't be despondent about the way of the world. I mean, you've got to look at the positives of it. I mean, in terms of racial equality, we now have a bright orange man as President of the United States, so that's going to be a good thing. Who'd have seen that coming?
Dinner fash, is that what you're saying? It'll all be fine.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, not to be too political about it, but I saw a very interesting analysis. We have to wait and see what happens. You know, it's like one of these things. There's no point worrying about it now. But the interesting thing I saw was that the American voters took him seriously, but not literally.
Yes.
And everyone else took him literally and not seriously, and that's why everyone's surprised. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, the song that's in my mind is, what's his name? Tom Lehrer, that we will all go together when we go, all wrapped up in an incandescent globe. But let's, we're not being despondent. However, because you're here, we can also get good theological advice. Can I ask where you stand on the, what I'm going to attempt to call the Advent Carol divide? Are you the type of ministers who decry the singing of any form of Christmas carol until around about the 24th?
Yeah, really interesting.
Or killjoys, as I like to call them.
Yeah, well, quite, that's right. When I came to my charge in 2004, I was very much of that frame of mind. I thought, right, what we're going to do is we're going to do all the Advent stuff, O Come Emmanuel,
and
all
the other ones.
Yeah, and several others, that's right.
Yeah.
But there are quite a few really nice Advent ones. And then just a few days before Christmas, we'll get around to Christmas. But in actual fact, your congregation, you discover, actually has lots of traditions in place already. And the best laid schemes, well, goodness me, they fairly go down the tubes. So what I found was I could manage to get to roughly about the 12th or 13th of December without doing too much Christmassy, and then it's just completely full on. And I walked into the church one day and discovered Santa's grotto. Well, not quite, but lots, lots and lots of fairy lights and all sorts of lighting of strange varieties. So, yeah, I have to say I love Advent. I absolutely adore Advent. But the point of Advent is to lead up to Christmas. So if there's a bit of a mixing and merging in there,
You can live with that. Oh, what do you think, Alex?
Of course, the answer to this question, as the answer to all these questions now, is that everything's changed post-Brexit. And we now can sing carols at any time of the year at all.
That's right.
Yeah, that's fine. No, I tend... we have special carol services. We don't sing carols as such until Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. There are quite a good number of Advent songs out there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I disagree with my learned friend. We're not leading up to Christmas. We're leading up to the Christ coming again.
No.
That's the Advent thing.
Yes, well, fair enough.
Not ministerial just
Christmas.
Fight.
No,
yes.
Now, Bill, as a probationer, do you have a... Sorry, probationer, do you have a view on this?
Yeah, being the youngest as well. No, I absolutely love Christmas. Robin and I were talking about this earlier, and I have it all. I mix it all up. I love Santa and Jesus and the same thing. I'm planning this year and having underneath my Christmas tree a nativity with Santa's train running around it.
Quite inclusive.
Oh, it really is. I mean, I would sing Christmas songs and actually have in June.
Because once, theologically, why not?
Well, exactly. If the song fits. But I was once part of a service that we had a Christmas service in June. This was in Hamilton. We didn't tell the congregation we were doing it. We just put a Christmas tree up. We had all of the hymns, all the carols, and the idea was Jesus is for life, not just for Christmas. Mm. And what was really interesting was a lady came out and she said, oh, that was fantastic. And we thought, oh, she's really got the theological idea behind it. She said, it's the first Christmas service I've enjoyed without having to worry about the family coming for dinner after.
And also, I mean, the clues are there. I mean, I can tell it's nearly Christmas because the Easter eggs are in the shops.
Yes.
But, I mean, things get earlier. It doesn't actually matter. The whole point is still, where does your story and God's story touch? And if you like singing carols in October, that's where your story and God's story touches. And it's not up to us to dictate it either. As Robin said, the traditions are all there. You go with what you find.
Yeah. And a tradition, of course, is to sing Christmas carols. We are a little bit early, you know, right at the start of December, but, you know, our listeners can listen to this whenever they want. They can get up on Christmas morning and listen to this back-to-back five times if they want. So do one of you want to introduce the carol you're doing for us first?
Well, it's one you may not have heard. You will. It's Away in a Manger. Mm-hmm. But it's the other tune. I think it's a nicer tune, perhaps because we're so used to the other one. I would also call this, would you call this the American tune?
Yes, I believe it is.
There are a couple of carols which the Americans sing that they use a different tune. And I know because Nat King Cole sings it. But I just think it's a lovely tune, Away in a Manger. I don't know what the tune's called, but...
Possibly Away in a Manger.
Could
I'm not
be.
Sure.
Could be. Could be. Bill, you might know Away in a Manger.
Away in a Manger 2.
Oh.
can I tell my Away in a Manger story, if it's quick?
Go quickly.
A friend of mine is a piano teacher. She used to be my piano teacher, but gave up. It was a bad job and just became a friend instead. And she told me a story that she was away one time playing around various schools in Glasgow, and she was playing at this carol concert, and there was something just not quite right. But she couldn't put her finger on it. And it was only after a while she realised that they were actually singing A Wain in a Manger. Which actually, when you think about it, makes an awful lot more sense.
Possibly not to our international listeners, but well, we will translate
not,
for
a
that.
A small child in a manger.
Yeah, how very appropriate. Okay, so this is Robin on dulcimer and Bill on guitar and Alex on vocal. And this is the American version, apparently, of Away in a Manger. Thank you, guys. Thank you. That was Alec, Robin and Bill with, well, obviously, Away in a Manger. They'll be back to play us another Christmas hymn later in the show. And now we come to 1,000 Words. So over to Anne. Who is your guest this month, Anne?
My guest this month is the Reverend Peter Gardner. Peter has just embarked on a pioneer ministry working with the visual arts community in Glasgow. Prior to this, he spent 14 years as parish minister in Renfield St Stephen's Church in the city centre. And during that time, he created many art installations there with his wife, Heidi, who is his longtime artistic collaborator. You'll not be surprised then that the image that Peter chose to talk about is of one of their installations. So what will we see if we take a look at this image on the Small Voice website?
What you'll see is strips of very thin paper, almost looking as thin as voil, hanging from a high space, flowing onto the ground with elegant folds. And as you look closely at the light part of the picture, you see words written. You can't quite make them out. Then you notice further back in the detail the word peace. Then if you look at it a little bit closer, you see the word peace is written again. And then if you look at the thin white paper, you'll see Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, Mali, 25 different countries' names. You can't see them all on the image, but spread beyond the left and the right of the image are more lines of paper hanging down from 3-4 metres up. They're falling onto the paper on the ground, which is lying on top of earth. The piece is entitled Peace on Earth. It was an installation that was made for Advent to Christmas 2015 in Renfield St Stephen's Church by the artists Gardner and Gardner, one of whom is me. And the idea of the installation was to help us think and pray about peace. As often with installations, the meaning that it begins with isn't the meaning that people take away from it. But I'll tell you about the meaning that we started with and the intention of the piece. The intention was to create a way of praying that was visually strong and emotionally deep. And so we suspended all these strips of paper. It's actually the paper we make tea bags out of. So if you can imagine perforated tea bag paper, yeah. And it comes in 5-centimetre width strips that are miles long. And we painted onto that the word peace, so that peace would be hanging from the ceiling to the floor. And on the floor, we covered it in fresh earth. A lovely smell with the underfloor heating warming the earth and the smell of the earth filling the room. But we also hung the names of all the countries, the 25 most war-torn countries according to the United Nations at the time of Advent 2015. And of all those 25 countries, there's names you'd expect, like Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan. But then you start to notice there are names that you wouldn't expect. India, Bangladesh, Kazakhstan, obviously at the time Ukraine and Georgia were quite high on the list. Colombia was in there because of the FARC. And every day we would gather a small group of people at this piece and we would pull down one of the strips with one of the names of a country. We would invite someone to choose it. I can particularly remember on Christmas Eve, the last country that was pulled down was Bangladesh, and we saw it coming down. But I invited a child to come out and help me find it, and we couldn't find it. So we had to ask other people to come out. And it was this lovely moment when there was a crowd of people standing gathered trying to find the country to pray for. What a great image of people just searching. And it was quite frustrating because we could see there's peace here, there's peace here, there's peace here. Where isn't there peace? And that grew into the question that informed our prayers. So the installation was about praying for peace. It was more than just the visual installation. It was also a way of participating in a piece of art and a moment of worship and a moment of prayer, of intercession for countries where peace, sadly, is still lacking.
How did the congregation respond to it?
Oh, they were amazing. They were amazing. First of all, when people came into the church is a neo-Gothic building with a beautiful space. It was refurbished around about the year 2000, and it's very minimal. If you can have a minimal neo-Gothic building, this was it. So this dominates the space, and it was quite a powerful thing. The light from the stained glass windows and the southern windows of the building shone across the piece, and that's why we cited where it was, angled light lighting up these words. And folk came in through the open door because we had the door open every day of the week. letting people come in and pray, or just engaging with folk in a very sort of open, listening way. And folk really engaged with it. It was there for one service that was held in conjunction with some of the funeral directors in Glasgow. And there were so many people there for that service. I think this church seats about 250, but there's about 400 people crowded round doors and on the pavement outside for this service. And this was hanging in the middle. And we had people coming up and just standing around it, just praying, talking about what they were looking for. And they were looking for peace themselves. And then they would notice the names of the countries. And you could see them joining their own grief with the grief we feel, that kind of mourning we feel that's mentioned in the Beatitudes. We all feel for the world that's not at peace. And as those two emotions gathered together, people were standing crying beside this. And as somebody who was involved in making it, it was so much bigger than I ever expected and more powerful than I ever expected. Our arts practice is to create site-specific art in the context of worship. And it begins, and we create it through a worship experience, but it's made to influence and impact and engage with people when they're worshipping. And it's really strange. You almost feel it's a different way of meeting people. I always hesitate to criticise words on the radio, because words are the medium of radio. But to create visual art is to do something without words. Every work of art is a place where an artist and a viewer or a listener meet. And it no longer becomes a conversation between the artist and the viewer. It becomes a conversation between the artist and the piece, and then the piece and the person. And so you have this strange three-way conversation starts.
It is true that perhaps particularly in the church in Scotland, we are a bit word-bound on the whole. It's lovely to think that we can get beyond that, and particularly in terms of praying for peace. I don't know about you, but quite often in prayers of intercession, you feel, what are my words about here? There aren't really any words that will do.
And sometimes we feel helpless. At the time we were making this, I felt very helpless about the war that had broken out in Ukraine. I felt quite moved by that. And there was a number of different installations we made at the time which explored the word peace and worked out what we can do. And all of them have the same thing, that even if we can't actively do something, well, we can be active in prayer. And prayer can be a way of campaigning for peace. I feel quite emotional talking about it, actually, but it's quite a deep thing to think that we can actually do this. We can actually make a difference by praying. Praying isn't always the withdrawal from the world. It is an act of engagement with the world. I would love it if more people would engage in vigils for peace. Last year we were in Berlin and we came across people standing with candles, and we went and joined them and discovered that we were part of a chain of people. It's 20 kilometres long, right across the heart of the capital city of Germany. It was at a time when there was a huge conversation in Germany about whether refugees should be welcomed or not welcomed, or the cost of it. And the churches and lots of other groups in Berlin had got together and asked people to stand and pray. So we're in the busiest city in Germany, and for 5 minutes we stopped, and the police stopped the cars, and there was silence in the street. We all stepped out onto the street, lines of candles for 20 kilometres. Just amazing. This is a way of praying, an active response to the world, a way of bringing the world, ourselves and God into the one space. Our prayer, and the prayer that informed all we did that month, was the prayer, "Your kingdom come on earth as in heaven." What a wonderful way to think about what's happening at Christmas. That the angel's message, that peace on earth, would actually happen.
And I think that's maybe the third guest. I mean, I couldn't swear to remember them all, but we've had quite a few people talking about art as a way for people to engage with faith, or maybe even begin to come to faith. And as you mentioned in the interview, interesting that that's kind of wordless in a sense.
Yeah, this is a recurring theme, and it's why I'm really interested to see what Peter's ministry will become with the visual arts community. You're right, the artist Ian Campbell that we interviewed and also the photographer Graham Clark both came to that same theme at the end of their interviews. they're definitely onto something. It's something in the zeitgeist. And I'm looking forward to seeing what this will become. We in the church, I think, now are taking a humbler role in our engagement with people.
Yeah.
And we're much more afraid of dogma, and we're much more afraid of assertion, and so we ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that lets people begin where they are and engage as they choose can only be good.
Now, naturally, our listeners will want to... I mean, it's an art installation, or it was an art installation,
yes,
but, you know, a photograph captures something of it, so where can we go to find that?
Yes, if you go to the website, smallvoice.org.uk, you'll see the image that Peter was talking about. But I think we'll also put up some other shots of the installation so you get the whole picture.
OK. And so straight on to our Small Voice of the Month, where we promote and praise people or organisations who may not make a song and dance about it, but they're making a big difference out there in the world, or maybe in the local community, or maybe a bit of both. And I was going to have a really kind of cheesy gag here and say, well, a small voice tells me that this month's one may be a bit closer to home, but I won't steal your thunder, Margaret. Go on. on you go and introduce it.
Yeah, well, of course, it had to be a festive small voice for December. And in the lead up to Christmas, there is such an outpouring of goodwill that it should really be easy to find something. But as I said before, I have been really, really busy. And I travel the country encouraging people to fill a shoebox with small gifts and basic items for someone in need. Then I get them all checked and ready for shipping. I should say I don't do all the checking, but I organise. Individual boxes become part of a container load. And then at the other end, there's thousands of individual gifts. There's a great response from schools, churches, companies, and I tried to meet as many as possible, and I have had very little time to find a small voice of the month. And then I realised that, of course, I've got an ideal small voice for December, and so I have brought my day job with me today. It's the Blythewood Care Shoebox Appeal, which began in 1993 with around 300 boxes, small start. They were sent from Scotland to Romania, and this year the 2 millionth box will be given out somewhere. They come from all over the UK. They come also from groups in Romania and will be distributed in 9 different countries. Well, who better to tell us perhaps a wee bit about it than Bolas Cesar, who is head of Blythewood Romania, who gives out thousands of boxes each year. But this is his own experience.
Often you would say, you know, 5 minutes or 20 minutes happiness, does it really make a difference? 3 years ago we've spent the Christmas Eve in the hospital with our 2 children. And it was, I must say, it was a miserable night, or the worst Christmas I ever had, until the moment when a group of young folk from a local church walked into the hall of the hospital and they started singing Christmas carols and distributing out shoeboxes. I mean, you know, tears were coming out of everybody's eyes, and lots of parents and with their children, and just seeing something happening in this miserable place. I've realized I've been doing this for so many years, but I was not the recipient, but that night I was the recipient, and it made it worth. I mean, tears come to my eye just thinking of that experience.
So that was Bolas, and I think it's just one of these things. That was the bit. I watch the promotional videos several times over, probably more than anybody else, because I have to show them to people. But that was the bit that really got me. And I think when you find a different angle on these things, it does tell you something. But the thing was repeated many times over. It's one box, but it's much more than that. So and it's much more than that for the donors as well as the recipients. Because I'm right in the middle of it, I suppose it's sometimes quite difficult to see things objectively. And I think it's an awful lot of work, but you wouldn't do it if you didn't feel it was worthwhile.
Yeah,
certainly in terms of our church, for instance, the children love to fill the shoeboxes and to think about the child that they're sending it to. So it's great for the donors as well as the recipients.
Yeah, I've got experience of this from my ex-school, the Royal High School in Edinburgh. Yay, Royal High School. Big shout out to the Royal High Massive. Because certainly they always used to do that, and it was not quite a competition between the different kind of form groups, as you call them. But, you know, in the run-up to Christmas, they were encouraged. And it's great in terms of course, it's practical. So it's great for the recipients in Romania, but it's also a nice connection for the school to have. And actually, our school has since sent kids, actually I say kids, teenagers, out to help build houses in Romania under Habitat for Humanity. So it's kind of nice circularity there. But they have, of course, made a huge difference. And Margaret, you'll know that better than anyone.
Well, it's quite intriguing to, every so often you meet somebody who, in this country as well, who says, I got a shoebox as a child. And the Romanian side of it's interesting as well. Those were the people who started off receiving and are now on the giving side as well. So, you know, there's a whole lot of different strands to it. I could be here all night, actually. I regularly do this, you know. Yeah. The time goes on and the clock's
going. Give us your stump speech.
No. Just tell me to stop.
Okay, so that's the Blythewood Care shoebox appeal, which is ongoing right now, presumably, yeah?
Yeah, so. Yes. Come to our depot and see the cartons stacked up, waiting for the lorry to take them away. Yeah.
And of course, with the new year will come new small voices, and we do invite our listeners to get in touch and let us know if you have any suggestions of people that you can think of, be they big or small, or organisations, local or international, wherever. We'd love to hear from you. Just go to our website, smallvoice.org.uk, or tweet us at @small_voice1. Now, Alec, Robin and Bill are back to keep us in the festive mood. This is the Christmas hymn, Angel Voices.
Angel voices richly blending, shepherds to the manger sending, sing of peace from heaven descending, shepherds greet your shepherd star is brightly glowing, Eastern kings their gifts are showing to the King whose gifts past knowing, Gentiles greet the Gentiles King.
Thank you so much. That was Alex, Robin and Bill, this time singing Angel Voices. Now, gents, do you want to tell us about that? It's a Christmas hymn of sorts, I believe.
That's a very old one. You can tell the really old ones because they've got Latin names, and that's Quem Pastores, which means something. Shepherds, probably, I don't know.
Pastores, shepherds, makes good sense to me.
Past stories that happened in the past, I expect. That'll be what that means.
You never had a Latin teacher, did you?
No.
It's so enlightening to be in on these theological discussions.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, if I can go for the tenuous, like, I have been advised, Bill, that you can tell us the connection between Santa Claus and the Council of Nicaea.
Yes, which, if memory serves me correctly, was in 321. AD. The only reason I know that is because the theology tutor at New College in Edinburgh told us it was the same as the number of steps to the bell tower in Durham Cathedral.
Well, there you go.
Not 3-2-1, the famous quiz.
I'm impressed you can do that.
And Santa Claus.
The Council of Nicaea was called because there was controversies within the church, mainly around a heresy called Arianism, which was to do with the nature of God. And at that particular Council of Nicaea, which was called by the Emperor Constantine, there was a bishop called Nicholas of Myrna. And Nicholas of Myrna got so annoyed with Arius, he actually went up and slapped him very hard, was put into prison in his full vestments, and apparently when they went in to get him the next day, he had miraculously disappeared and whatever. So that's the story. But Nicholas of Myrna went on to become Saint Nicholas, who is, of course, Santa Claus. So the Council of Nicaea, as far as we know, is the only event at which we know for certain that Santa Claus slapped somebody. And that is historically true.
People say that we're not educational on this podcast.
And they're right. They really are.
Now, you have got some Christmas concerts coming up, I think, because we had Alex and Robin, you were in before, and I think it was in November, a year or so back. Yeah. And you were talking a lot about the kind of concerts that you do over Christmas. So now's your chance to plug. I mean, there will be listeners in Florida checking see if EasyJet has right flights to MacMerry.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, this year, we always try to choose different places because the places that we've been to won't have us back. So this year, we're going to two new places. And at 7:30 on Friday, the 16th of December, we're going to be in Rossyth Parish Church.
7:30, and I told them 7 o'clock.
It's 7 o'clock. If people turn up at 7, then that's fine.
That's fine.
Our listeners abroad, you would describe Rossyth as the
very, 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 very south of Fife on the east coast of Scotland.
The only garden city in Scotland, I think, around saying Rossyth. Yes, it is.
There we go.
Designed as a garden city. Hmm. And the great thing about Rossyth, I'll see your St. Nicholas story in ways.
Absolutely.
Your international listeners won't know what prefabs are, but prefabs are prefabricated concrete houses built after the war. And in Rossyth, they were in an area called Dollytown.
Isn't that wonderful?
Isn't that wonderful?
It is a garden city. But that, Rossyth Parish Church on the 16th.
And then the following night, on the 17th, we're going back just across the water from there to Queensferry, which people sometimes mistakenly call South Queensferry. But you've got Queensferry and North Queensferry. So we're going to Queensferry Parish Church, and that will be great fun because I've been the probationer there, and I've got lots and lots of friends there. So hopefully they'll turn out and come to see us rather than stay at home and watch Strictly.
And the idea of these concerts is, you know, all that stuff where ministers get very fulminating and start saying, this is not Christmas, and Christmas trees and Santa and all that kind of stuff. And they take it all out of Christmas. We put it all back in.
Yeah.
We sing the Christmas songbook, you know, chestnuts roasting and silver bells and all that stuff. And that's great fun.
Everybody knows a turkey.
Yes. and the world is doings, heard on high. We do that as well.
And Robin,
also,
there is
moving ones too. Very moving ones, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Now, Robin, there is also a very niche concert. You might not be able to fit that many people in, but in your...
Well, yeah, this is one that's still at the planning stage.
Okay,
we hope it
stage.
Will happen. In one of my two parishes, the parish of Gladsmuir, there's the wonderful village of MacMerry. And it just occurred to me this week, why, in all the years I've been there, why have we never had a Christmas show called Have Yourself a MacMerry Little Christmas? So whether we have time to organise a concert around that title or not remains to be seen. But that's the plan. So you never know.
Even if you don't have the concert, you should put the poster up.
Yeah, definitely.
Or just as a message, a banner.
Yes, have yourself a MacMerry Little Christmas.
In fact, it's criminal that you've not done that outside the church.
We shall put it right.
Yeah. Well, thank you as ever for being here and for kind of helping us to get into the Christmas spirit and for cheering us up. I hope that you'll come back again. We might even get you when it's not Christmas. You never know.
Yeah.
And thanks very much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so we come to our moral mixdown, and of course this has to be a festive moral mixdown. We normally take a big issue and kick it round from a philosophical angle, from a theological, maybe from a spiritual, ethical viewpoint. So we thought we'd do something a bit Christmassy. Now, I have got live streaming here, a generic fruit-based device, as they say. I have gone to the Present Aid website, which is run by Christian Aid, bless them, where I can get charitable gifts, best-selling charity gifts I can exclusively reveal, a mobile health clinic for 115, blimey, a basket of chicks for 30 quid, a nanny goat for £22. The idea that's called ethical giving. You buy a nanny goat for someone, well, really for a village, but the recipient gets a little card, maybe a little toy nanny goat as well, and a little message about them. So that's called ethical giving. Not quite sure how long ago it all started. I'm guessing about 10 years ago.
It feels something like longer.
Yeah, maybe longer. So there's a big question. There have been some discussion about whether these are generally the best things to be providing to the developing world. Who knows? So we are going to kind of kick around the idea behind that, because there might be some strong views on this. So, Anne, do ethical gifts ring your bell or get your goat?
Yes. They ring my bell. I have both given and received ethical gifts for a long time. When you asked there how long they've been going, I think probably the first goat I gave, and I think it was a goat, must have been about 20 years ago. I think it was Oxfam.
Oh, that long
were
ago.
One of the first charities to do it. And since then, I've regularly given gifts from charities and also been delighted to receive them. This is possibly something to do with my age, of course, but there isn't really anything that I would want for myself these days. So somebody saying I've bought a goat or a basket of chicks or tools, gardening tools or whatever, for somebody in a developing country absolutely thrills me. I can't think of a better present.
Okay, Margaret, what about you?
Yes, I have. Well, I was once given a goat. That goat is probably long passed on, but I'd like to think there's a little dynasty of goats, because that's part of the principle, of course. You start off with one and then you end up with lots more that everybody can benefit from. I don't see a problem in it particularly, so long as, well, if you're giving, you can investigate, I suppose, the organisation that you are helping. That there's all sorts of other animals, I suppose. My granddaughter had a birthday recently, and I decided that to join the tiger that I gave her a few years ago, she's now got a snow leopard, except it's not just one snow leopard, apparently there's a whole pack of them, which I think is remarkably good value for a fiver a month. I suppose, yes, I feel I'm doing something worthwhile, and for a child who is at the learning stage and old enough to appreciate that, yeah, they're doing something to help the world. It's not a bad idea.
Anne thinks it's a great idea. You think it's a great idea. Clearly, I must think it's a great idea as well. So we can all just go home, except I am rolling up my sleeves, ladies and gentlemen. I'll quote back at you, Anne. You know, I can't think of anything that I need. Stop being so Scottish, woman. For goodness sake, what would be wrong with someone near to you thinking, you know what? Here's a wee thing, just a wee thing. Doesn't have to be expensive. I'm not talking about going past £2 necessarily, because I know we're very Scottish about this, you know. Here's something that Anne would really like and hasn't seen, and it's a wee surprise, and it's a way of expressing my love for Anne in a very particular and singular way. So here's my honest perception on this, and, you know, no disrespect to people who give these gifts. When someone gives me one of those, I think, oh, thank you. You have decided that I need to know, A, that you are the kind of person who gives to charity, and B, you're assuming that somehow I would like that as well. I am perfectly capable of and do give money to charity, as I assume do my friends. So I don't need this middle class, smug kind of self-satisfaction. Here's a picture of a goat. You know, I'm so worthy. What I'm going to do is I'm going to assume that we are above such awful things as giving a gift to express love. As Scots, twice a year, Christmas and birthday, we give something finally to those we love. And we moan about it. No, I love doing that. I love trying to think of something that someone would genuinely enjoy. Not to give them a photo of a goat and say, there you go. Isn't the world a terrible place? Don't we all need this somehow? Oh, how appalling. Oh, you know, I bought you some chocolate. Oh, the world's going to end because there's someone suffering in Africa. Yes, there's someone suffering in Africa. Give some money to that person. But you know what? Give me some chocolate.
Well, as long as it's fair trade chocolate, that's okay.
I was thinking it was socks that you were after, really.
But you seriously, know. Why? You know, just look, just give the money. And okay, seriously, fine, it's great for charity and it's appalling that charities are having to do this. But you know, just give a gift to someone that you love that in some way expresses something that you know what? Give a gift to someone where they get a gift. That's kind of what I'm getting on at here.
Well,
because
I
don't have a gift. I've got a photo of a goat. You've spent £10 and I've got nothing.
What is the point?
They gave Jesus gold, frankincense and myrrh. They didn't say, you know what? There's starving children further away from here. Here's a picture of a bit of straw. The world is upside down here, people. Maybe it's just me.
No, it's not just you. It's not just you, Dan. I'll come clean. In most Scottish households at Christmas, there's your big present and there's your wee present.
That's even worse. I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, they give two presents. So I still get my present and I get the worthy present.
And I do love my wee present to be something really personal to me. That
nothing
only
too
somebody,
expensive.
Only somebody who loves me knows that I will like.
Yes.
Not as my husband once did, buy me a calculator. It was only 30 years ago, but I have never forgotten.
Your calculator.
Apparently, I once expressed the view that that's a nice calculator. So he immediately dashed out of my But usually there's a nice little present that's just for me, and I do love that. But I actually love the fact that my big present goes to somebody else. I really, really do. Maybe when you're my age, Darren.
Oh.
And you're free of world. No, no.
Stop
I mean,
being so Scottish. Honestly,
when you're old,
it's like you're afraid of enjoying yourself at Christmas.
When you're old and free of worldly things, you'll really like it. You'll love it. You'll be asking for a goat for somebody.
I'll be asking for good slippers.
Yes.
And a case of wine. And I will rest easy at night, knowing that my friends and family are perfectly capable of giving a gift, and I don't need to know how much it is. They will be doing that. They just don't need to do it on my behalf. Maybe I'm just getting a bit old. See, I think I'm getting old and grumpy about it. And don't get me started in doing it for the kids, because it's a little lesson for them, you know. See the wee face on Christmas morning if that's all you give them.
Yes, I read an article about somebody who said that the child spent the whole Christmas day asking, where is my goat?
And that's also a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Now, maybe we've opened a can of worms here, or maybe I'm the only one who gets really, really grumpy about this. Please do contribute to the debate if you want. You can go to our website, smallvoice.org.uk, or you can tweet us at @small_voice1. Well, that's the end of our show, folks. So that's us all another hour closer to death. I mean, Christmas. And whether you're planning to enjoy a rowdy time with family and friends or a quieter Christmas on your own, possibly with a goat, everyone here at Small Voice would like to wish you all the very best for the festive season. We don't do sermons, of course, but just remember, God loves us, God is for us, and God is with us. That's got to be worth a wee celebration, surely. May God bless us, everyone, and we'll see you in 2017.